Welcome to Farmgate. I'm Finlow Costain. Dominic Cummings, the UK Prime Minister's strategist-in-chief, has said that he wants to shake up government. He wants to break the alleged stranglehold that the civil service has over policy development and delivery. He's asked for ideas, and we want to help. Of course, our focus is agricultural land use and food production, and my goodness, what challenges we face. Humanity is looking into the jaws of a climate catastrophe at the same time as peering down the throat of a potential breakdown of nature, both of which will severely affect our ability to produce good quality, nutritionally diverse food at a national scale. Alongside these existential threats, we have Brexit, new trade deals, and rapidly evolving supply chains. Is Britain up to the job? As we leave the Common Agricultural Policy, can Dominic Cummings help ministers to unleash the vibrancy of the market and the ingenuity of our farmers and communities? Or will the civil service clamp him down with paperclips, wrap paperwork and process around his ambition, finally smothering the bouncing baby of a burgeoning bottom-up land use revolution? Well, I've spoken to five big beasts of the food and farming community. I've asked them to help me to help Dom. Each of them has 2 minutes to outline their reforms, followed by a short conversation about their ideas, 6 minutes each in total. In other words, it's the perfect length of podcast for Dominic Cummings to listen to on his commute. Let's hope he does. First up, we have Sue Pritchard. Sue is the director of the highly influential RSA Food, Farming and Countryside Commission. I gave her 2 minutes to reform the government.
So I'm going straight at the seat of power. I'm going for Treasury reform. And I would like to see at the heart of Treasury, in fact, senior to the Chief Secretary to the Treasury, a new Secretary to the Treasury for public value. So often departments are played off against each other. So these really important issues that you outline, things like climate change and the nature crisis, but also the public health crisis and the crisis of the polarisation in our communities, stay as crises because the opportunities for acting on them sit across multiple departments. And so the interests of departments act against the requirement to work more collaboratively together. And we need to break that down. So a Secretary for Public Value will utilise a thing that already exists within Treasury, but is very underutilised, and that's called the Public Value Framework. And it will have responsibility to do 4 things. First of all, develop an expanded scope for that public value framework and look at the whole resource that contributes or depletes public value. At the moment, it just looks at public spending, but there are so many other ways that support public value or deplete it through private sector resources. Then we would look at the value in supply chains. We'd look at value in place. And we would look at the kind of value that's generated through healthy social processes. And finally, we'd be looking at all of the ways in which other sectors, other industries, other businesses actually extract public value for their own profit, leaving the bill at the Treasury door. All of that needs to be made more visible, to be confronted, and to be acted on at the heart of the power base, which is in Treasury itself.
Thank you very much for that. That's a really interesting set of proposals. I'm interested in that last element first, how businesses extract public value.
So there are so many ways in which businesses and whole sectors are currently benefiting from their activities through passing off costs elsewhere to the public purse.
And who do you have in mind here? Just give us an example.
Let's talk about agrochemical companies who make an absolute fortune out of supplying synthetic chemicals to the farming sector, and which then require cleaning up out of the water system. And let's talk about sugar. Sugar companies currently make significant profit through growing a crop that has marginal benefit for the human diet. We can tax unhealthy products and we can tax activities that are passed off. But I think more importantly, we can raise the regulatory baseline.
So let's go back to the bigger picture. A Secretary of State for Public Value, to look at this issue that you're saying is diluted across a number of different departments and find a way of pulling that together and giving the issue some clout.
Do you know, I'd go even further. I would say that that minister could also be responsible for two other things. We need a new economic paradigm. At the moment, the way that we measure economic performance through GDP is proving to be destructive and unhelpful. And in countries who've started thinking about a well-being economy, they're exploring those ways in which we can put public value at the heart of an economic system. The second thing that needs to happen, I think, is the broader definition of public value and exploring more what the public really values. We need much better systems to understand what really matter to the public. Our current democratic processes are deeply inadequate and so easily manipulated by people with particular interests and those that lobby for them.
I'm reminded as you talk about a well-being economy, about the proposals from Dieter Helm around natural capital. And of course, those have come in for criticism. Some people find it somehow difficult to put a financial value, which is what he's proposed, to some of these sort of more well-being related elements about enjoyment of the countryside and so on. Is that a similar issue here? Are we talking about in a well-being economy trying to put a financial value against people's sense of well-being and how they experience it?
Well, I think you're absolutely right to point up the limitations of the capital's approach, because that comes at the conversation through a particular economic paradigm and financialising all the things that are really important to us. I think we need to change the conversation away from extractive notions and towards more regenerative principles. Kate Raworth expresses this brilliantly in Donut Economics and requires us to think much more creatively and, frankly, honestly about those things that we really value. We need to shift that conversation. And that has to happen at the heart of Treasury.
So the government at the moment in DEFRA is reforming through its agriculture bill the way that farmers receive funding, so that we have a new model of public funds for public goods. But what it seems to me is that your proposal around public value is a way of trying to reconnect that work at a farm level with the customer, with the citizen, so that there is a much better sort of broader understanding of the value of the countryside, the value of nature, and good and high quality nutritious food production.
That's exactly right. And how all of the different systems interconnect. So while we're talking about the agriculture bill and farm payments, they're also intimately connected with state of biodiversity, with the economic prospects of rural communities and the nation's health and well-being. That needs to be understood in the round.
That was Sue Pritchard from the RSA. Guy Smith is the Deputy President of the National Farmers Union. I gave him a magic wand and asked him to spell out the changes that he would like to see.
Well, obviously, Brexit is going to impact on agriculture probably more than any other industry. So for a generation, since the 1960s, more or less, agricultural policy and delivery has largely been in the command of Brussels. But now it's going to be repatriated back to Whitehall. And so for the first time for a generation, the civil servants of Whitehall are going to be fully in charge of agricultural policy. And there are a number of departments that will have a big impact on the future of agriculture as we lay out the path to the next generation. The Home Office will be in charge of access to labour. DEFRA will clearly be a key department for laying out agricultural policy, but let's not forget the likes of DCMS when it comes to broadband provision, MHCLG, another department that are going to be in charge of rural infrastructure, and the Department of Trade, obviously key trade deals determining the future of British agriculture in that respect. So a lot of new agendas across Whitehall. Now, how the best way to rearrange those various departments to address this plethora of issues is a very good one. On the one hand, you could say, well, let's be cautious and stick to the web we know, as it were, and not try and shake the cocktail up too much. On the other hand, you could say, no, this is a time for brave, radical thinking We need new approaches, new responsibilities in different departments. Climate change, you know, probably the biggest challenge humanity has in front of it, and how we feed a population of the globe that is rising exponentially without further pressurizing our planet. Huge challenges. And we will watch this space. At the moment, the NFU lobbies across government, across departments, but we will be light-footed if we see the map changing radically.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, of course, those of us who've been working on this over the last 3 years or so, we've just kind of got on with the job. We've been thinking about the policies and the way that things need to change, but you're absolutely right. This is the first time that DEFRA will have had proper control over agricultural policy, land policy, the way that the infrastructure works to deliver that policy for a very long time, and the question of whether DEFRA itself can do that job remains to be seen. So do you think there is a need for, a cabinet level committee or perhaps a new department that factors in food, you know, at front and centre of what it does to cut across these different departments that you mentioned?
Well, I'm sure if you spoke to most farmers, they would say we want MAF back, the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries and Food, because they feel that that gives our industry the prestige and prominence that we think it needs. Unfortunately, I think that's unlikely to happen, although, you know, we would always put that out there as a demand. So I think we will in future continue to have to walk through the front doors of several departments on different issues. But the more centralized they are, then it's probably going to be more coherent. So if there was a department for climate change, then obviously food production and the management of the land of the UK would fit fully in that department. But it is just too early to tell. And I suppose too often you don't find out whether these new ideas have worked until after the event, which sometimes is too late, or sometimes you applaud the blue sky thinking that took place in the initiation.
I wonder if you have a view about the amount of power and control that that government should have. Obviously, a farmer knows their own land, and they can potentially work with quite broad goals that government sets in order to deliver the best possible achievements, the best possible outcomes against those goals at a local level. How much, at the same time, you know, in the same way that Brussels has over the course of the last few decades, there can be quite specific measures, directions over inputs and outcomes. Where do you think that balance lies?
Well, again, going back to the farm gate, you know, most farmers would much rather get on with the job of managing the countryside and producing food and to be paid by the market and to have as little government or regulatory interference as possible. However, again, I think this is a most unlikely scenario. By the very nature of agriculture, you get involved in the management of the environment, whether it's water, air or soil, and regulation comes fast and furious. It always has done. And across the world, governments tend to view food as a strategic thing. And that's been the case in history as well. Politicians always get a bit wary of the possibility of having a hungry population because that is a very angry electorate. And so if politicians ever think there may be an interruption in food supplies, they move pretty quickly. And it's interesting that under the new agricultural bill, there is now agreed, and the NFU are very keen on this, that there will be a review of food security. So to make sure that as a nation, we retain the ability to feed ourselves.
Guy Smith there from the NFU. Vicky Hurd is the Sustainable Farming Coordinator at Sustain, a coalition organisation representing over 100 food and farming NGOs.
I would look at restructuring government. So you have a climate and nature emergency department, not just climate, because I think you can get some really bad outcomes if you follow purely a climate focus. So I think it'd be good to have a department at cabinet level. So it was covering all departments and really driving change across the board to deliver a sustainable food and farming programme, building on the public money for public goods programme that we've already got. So paying farmers to get it right and helping land managers to do the right thing to build up nature-based solutions. And that solution is in the field as well as around the field. I think we've got to really not separate the two. I think there's a real risk in doing a land sparing approach rather than land sharing. It's really got to be phasing out things like factory farms, which draw in far too much inputs into the system, and chemicals, the chemical treadmill that the farmers are on. And to do that, I think we ought to implement an agroecological education scheme, 10 years for agroecology, where farmers are given training, but training that really suits them, that takes them from where they are in the agroecological spectrum to the next stage and onwards, and make it really accessible, affordable, or free to farmers to actually get that appropriate training and appropriate technologies. There are some great technologies coming online. Let's use them. Let's not go down the route of all technologies are going to be great because they're going to give us instant food without all the environmental consequences. That's not the way to go. I think we need to be still farming proper food from the soil, but using the best technologies, but also using knowledge and the nature-based systems. And for all that to work, we've got to make the market work. We need to really develop new routes to market for farmers so they can go out with the current incredibly, incredibly concentrated market that they have to deal with now. So they need to be able to get out of those big retailer markets and go collaborate and cooperate themselves.
Vicky, we're out of time. That's 2 minutes. That's fantastic. But there's so much in there. What I'm interested in is this climate and nature emergency department. What is it responsible for that's different to what DEFRA is responsible for now? What's thrown in, what's thrown out?
Yeah, well, obviously climate covers far more than farming. So it's got to cover all the energy, transport, housing, getting all that right, but also seeing farming and land use as part of that. So it would have the whole gamut of solutions available and be able to drive change. You know, but also not to drive it in a way that will destroy the nature that we need also to rely on.
So does DEFRA...
It would be taking some from DEFRA and from other departments, certainly BEIS, to deliver what we need.
So it's a new department while we still keep hold of the other departments. DEFRA still exists, but we have this department as well.
Yeah, and it needs to include international. Our international footprint is huge, not just in food, but it is in food and feed. So we need to be thinking about challenging that impact overseas. There's good trade and there's bad trade, and that department would have to take account of that as well.
What I'm interested in is whether this is a continued sort of big government approach where this new department will come up with bright ideas and then prescribe what needs to happen on the ground, or are you seeing this department as something which guides and sets goals but gives freedom to farmers and landowners to deliver what they need to do themselves and to come up with their own solutions?
That's a really good question. I don't think I have the answer to that because I've seen voluntary approaches fail on so many occasions. You know, leaving it to the market has not worked over the last 30, 40 years. So I think, you know, what you describe, where it could actually guide and give the right incentives, rewards and regulation and that kind of approach could work, but it still needs that level of intervention. Maybe in 10 years' time it would be needed if the industry is going the right direction, but I'm a bit nervous about leaving it all to the market.
No, absolutely. And I mean, what I was meaning more was that there is a legislative framework which is more broad brush, which requires that farmers deliver against certain goals in order to be continuing in receipt of public money. And of course, you know, then there's sort of regulations, legal compliance sort of associated with that as well. But at the moment, DEFRA seems to be quite prescriptive in terms of inputs, for example, for sustainable improvements on farms. And that there's an argument that perhaps limits the need for farmers to actually have a broad understanding of why and what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that's where my agroecological schools could come in. You might not like the term, it might not ever run like that, but it's having a system whereby farmers can actually get access to the tools that they might need and the range of tools that they might want to apply, but not being prescriptive, as you say. But I think in some areas they need to be prescriptive, such as our huge use of very unsustainable feeds or the level of chemicals, if we can really cut back on that and use genuine integrated pest management approaches. So it's, you know, setting targets, as you say, giving farmers the freedom to apply what they know, but also giving them the training, advice and demonstration to help them to do that.
And it sounds like from what you've said, with your magic wand, if you were looking forward 10 years to the type of farming that we have, an agroforestry approach would be central to your vision.
Absolutely. Agroforestry, I think, has a huge part to play. Agroforestry and hedges to deliver both, you know, soil, livestock care, soil management, as well as potentially food. You know, there's some good agroforestry schemes which are delivering fruit rather for farmers, which is an additional income. Yeah, it's a good part of the system.
Vicky Hurd from Sustain. Next up, we have Mark Bridgman. Mark is the president of the Country Land and Business Association, or the CLA, if you prefer. I asked him what he'd do if he had the power to restructure the UK government.
I'd like to focus on four things that I think would really make a difference. Firstly, around climate change, clearly at the heart of what government's focusing on at the moment, particularly in the lead up to the COP26 this year. We've got some big picture ideas, but what does that mean and how we actually deliver it? I think we need to put in place a carbon trading system. It's the only way that we're really going to restructure the economy so that those that are generating CO2 can offset it by paying for others to sequester it. I think that carbon trading system needs to be mandatory, and that's the only way we're really going to tackle the CO2 issue. Secondly, I think in order to address the productivity challenge in rural areas, which we see is very evident, we see a 16% gap between rural productivity and the national average. If you close that gap, that would be 43 billion of GVA for the UK economy. In order to do that, I think the government needs to set up a cabinet committee for rural productivity to really pull the different strands together. DEFRA look at rural affairs as part of their brief, but I think it's probably underpowered and under-resourced, and it really needs to look cross-department. So we'd like to see a cabinet committee pull all that together and address rural productivity, whether it's around planning, connectivity, and all the different challenges that are there. Thirdly, we think government needs to tackle the regulatory hurdle, that we face as farmers. We need to move away from this incredibly bureaucratic big brother watching us, filling in all these forms to the nth degree. You know, as farmers, we have to fill in paperwork to identify down to the fourth decimal place of a hectare. That's 0.0001 of a hectare. That's one square metre. I worked out on the back of an envelope, that's probably 200 billion of those in the UK. And we really need to move away from that micromanagement. Fourthly and finally, as we look to increase our trade globally, as we come out of Europe, hopefully we'll continue to have a free trade with Europe, but we're going to look to trade more internationally. We've got fantastic food products and produce that we can sell, but we really need government to get behind that. Government has done a certain amount, but we think there should be a real big push and investment to support our exports. Are these high-end, high-product, high-quality products that we're producing in this country.
Thank you very much. Really interesting proposals. I'd like to go into that first one. The Committee on Climate Change, when it presented its recent land use report, has proposed charging oil companies and other big polluters and hypothecating that money to pay for land-based sequestration. I presume that is something that you would support, but I wonder how we can achieve that land-based sequestration without land prices is just going through the roof.
Well, I think we certainly think it's a good idea, but I mean, we shouldn't just focus on the airline industry, for example. We need to think about the whole economy. What I think it will do is it will provide the funding through the private sector for this really ambitious tree planting targets that the government has set and that the Climate Change Committee has set. Now, I think food production and locking up carbon don't have to be mutually exclusive. You know, the way that carbon is locked up in grasslands, and you know, there's plenty of land out there where I think we could do this offsetting.
So really there's a way, we kind of need to look at finding ways of having that sequestration value delivered alongside continued food production.
Most definitely. Yeah, this is not about either or. The two things need to work together.
Now, you talked about rural productivity. There is a real need for government to take a serious look at the way the rural economy works. You're talking about a cabinet level structure with a minister taking responsibility, not just at DEFRA, but across government for radical rural reform. What would be their key goals?
Well, for us, it's about working across department. That's, I think, really the point I want to would make. You know, where we see the opportunity to boost productivity in rural areas, you know, I'll just give you some key points. One is around connectivity. Now, I know the government has spoken about this quite a bit, and it was talked about in the election with a sort of arms race as to who could roll out broadband quickest. But it is hugely important getting that fiber broadband into all houses, getting the mobile coverage. We've only got 2/3 of the country has got 4G mobile coverage from all the four networks. Yes, there's plans in place, but we need to hold the people that are delivering this to account. And so on connectivity, but also actually connectivity is broader than just communications. It's all about the electric grid. If you think about what climate change is all about and how we restructure the UK economy, a lot of this is going to have electricity at the heart of it, whether that's electric cars, whether it's electric houses, is how we heat our houses with heat exchangers, whether it's battery storage, whether it's renewables. The electric connectivity, the electric grid is absolutely crucial. And right now it's not really working. So farmers, I spend my whole time talking to farmers who would like to do stuff, whether it's around renewable energy, whether it's around storage, and they just can't get the grid connection. Also around planning, I think there's we need to address some of the planning constraints within rural areas. We find our members often held back through planning, whether it's for delivering rural housing or whether it's delivering new business opportunities and the cost of the planning system. We think we need to sort of fast track and accelerate some of those processes.
Mark Bridgman from the CLA. My final big beast is Patrick Holden. Patrick is the founding director and chief executive of the Sustainable Food Trust. I asked him what the challenges are and what he'd do about them.
Well, I believe that UK farmers have become commodity slaves, trapped by dishonest food pricing in an ever-escalating downward cycle towards industrial farming. And if we are to address the triple challenges of climate change, the biodiversity catastrophe, and the crisis of public health, we need top-down action supported by market interventions in combination to enable farmers to switch by 2030 or at the very latest 2040 to sustainable production systems. I know this can be done if we redirect the Pillar One payments, which farmers currently are getting in the form of Social Security payment, to reward sustainable farming practices. And I believe that governments need to measure the impact of farming on natural capital, public health, and biodiversity. And that can be achieved through the introduction of a universally harmonized framework for measuring on-farm sustainability.
Fantastic. So you're looking at a top-down reform and intervention in the marketplace. Tell me about that market intervention. What do you want the government to do to shift the way that the market works currently?
We need the way in which farmers are rewarded for sustainable practices to be complemented by market support. At the moment, the existing consumer certification schemes do not link to government policy, and that needs to be sorted out. It can be addressed quite easily if there is a harmonisation process between certification and the new government incentives in the post-Brexit policy package.
Now, you and the government both are talking about this. We're going to see this change from what you call social security payments for farmers, so a shift away from subsidy to payments for the public goods that farmers are delivering. Now, there has been disquiet within the mainstream farming community that this This shift away from the subsidisation of food production may mean that we have less food.
We need to look at the impact of the adoption, the universal UK adoption of sustainable farming practices on food outputs. They will dramatically affect the balance of the food commodities that we produce. The impact of these production changes needs to be taken into account by government, but it also means that we will need to change people's diets. And that can be achieved if the public understand the need for changed diets to align them, their future eating patterns, with the productive capacity of UK agriculture. It means the end of cheap chicken, it means more vegetables, and it means a reduction of intensively produced crops. But since we are currently wasting 50% of all the food that is produced between farm and fork, and if people were to change their diets, we could achieve this outcome within the capacity of sustainable production systems. Farmers are rightly worried about imports from unsustainable production systems in other countries, but we can have the introduction of a combination of taxes and tariffs, which ensure that we lead the world in the introduction of an internationally harmonised framework for trade in sustainably produced foods.
Now, just finally, Patrick, we have spent 50 years developing this industrialised model of agriculture, more than 50 years, and people like yourself, organisations like the Sustainable Food Trust, the Soil Association, Friends of the Earth, Compassionate Wool Farming, have been working for several decades trying to educate people about the impacts of their food, where their food comes from, and still sustainable food is a relatively small proportion of the market share. Are we just fiddling at the edges while Rome gets ready to burn, while it's starting to burn? Can we really deliver this change at the rate that we need?
Yes, it will be possible to deliver the change that's needed, but it is a transition which is unprecedented in human history. Transition to sustainable food systems which operate within planetary boundaries and address the crises that we've been discussing. And unfortunately, the NGO community as yet do not fully understand that in order to protect biodiversity, the little remaining biodiversity, which used to coexist in harmony with food production, which is now marginalized to the edge of otherwise intensively farmed land, we need to move away from the concept of land sparing and stewardship and rewilding, as advocated by George Monbiot, towards a new harmonious relationship between food production and biodiversity working together. This is not in the mindset of most of the environmental groups right now.
So we need to change to a system where land, rather than being spared off to deliver this bit of sequestration here, this bit of ever more intensive food production over there, this bit of rewilding here, every hectare, as far as possible, needs to be delivering multiple outcomes.
Land use holds the key, but currently the leading orthodoxies in many of the research and academic communities and in the food industry are still advocating what I would call old thinking of land sparing rather than land sharing.
Patrick Holden from the Sustainable Food Trust. When I first started thinking about this podcast, I expected to encounter a range of views, not least about the role of government itself, its size, its accountability, and its power. But interestingly, nobody has suggested shrinking government. Each of the proposals, whether for new ministers or a realignment of priorities, has envisaged a strong role for government. Let me end by challenging that just a little. In my view, agricultural land use and food production has been under the control of government and the big retailers supported by the government for too long. We know that we are facing environmental crises, that our rural communities are struggling, that food prices bear little resemblance to the actual costs of production, let alone the externalised environmental and social costs, and that good farm animal health and welfare can be extremely patchy. I put it to you that government has failed, and perhaps it's time that government got out of the way. Rather than creating new systems riddled with complexity, government should focus on the bigger picture. Ministers should set bold, sustainable land use and food production priorities focused on climate mitigation, nature's restoration, and the production of high-quality food. But what then? Citizens and the market should pay for the food, while public funds are used to pay for public goods based on the model the government has proposed, but using acreage as a basis for payments because every acre must either be restored to excellence or maintained at that level. Beyond that, in my view, government needs to take a step back. Farmers need to find their own way to step up and take ownership of their own sustainable farm management plans. If farmers want payments from the taxpayer, then it should be up to them to demonstrate delivery. This would mean baseline footprinting of carbon and nature metrics as a gateway requirement for public funds, after which in-the-round progress must be demonstrated annually, perhaps assessed through private sector assurance schemes. Our policy and financial support systems are built, it seems to me, to mitigate against failure rather than with the expectation of success. I want optimism and trust in human goodness and innovation to be placed at the centre of government delivery. Can you do that, Dom? If you've enjoyed listening, please come back and listen to more. Tell your friends, like us, review us, and share our links. FarmGate is a partnership project for Farmwell and FAI Farms, and you can join the conversation on Twitter by searching for FarmGate Podcast. I've been Finlow Castain. Bye for now.